Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have got some things to go over today. First of all, celebrity is a big deal in America, isn't it? I mean, we make a big deal out of celebrity. We see that a lot of these celebrities feel that just because they have a hit movie or they sing a song that everybody likes or they make a lot of money, no doubt the industry produces multimillionaires. If you like something and people buy it, I think it's a great industry. It's a great industry for America. It's a great industry for talented people. I know lots of very talented people who make their time and money in the music business, or they want to make movies or whatever. But do we care what the actors think about the world? I mean, just because you're an actor in a famous movie, does that mean that suddenly your opinion about the world means anything? You know, recently we saw Sean Hannity had a big interview with what's his name, the actor. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and a bunch of other stuff. And he was over in Ukraine filming about the people of Ukraine when the war started. And all of a sudden, he's got this big opinion, and everybody's worried about this actor's opinion. What difference does it make? I remember Laura Ingraham said one time, she wrote her book, Shut Up and Sing, which was basically saying the same thing. We don't care what these actors' opinions are. I mean, they're just people like everybody else. But because they have a huge platform, sometimes they feel they have something important to say. Now, I suppose sometimes there are people that are in that kind of a business that do have something important to say, just like there are some regular people that have important things to say. They just don't always have a vehicle by which to say it. I mean, I look at this radio program because I have an outlet. That doesn't mean my opinion is any more important than anyone else's. I just happen to have a vehicle to voice my opinion. So let me ask you this. Does anybody out there care about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and their relationship, and you know, who pooped in whose bed and who did? Does anybody really care about that? I mean, I liked the movies where Johnny Depp was the pirate from back in the day. I thought that was pretty good. Amber Heard, I've seen her in a couple of films. She's a very attractive, beautiful woman. But do I really care about their personal life? That, you know, you're watching the news and also, we're going to break in now. We're going to do 25 minutes of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Do you really care about that? I don't know. I don't care that much. I have my own life going on here, you know, and I tell you about it. I don't even know that you care about my life when I tell you about my personal stuff. But I just find it so interesting, so pop culture, that these two famous actors having this horrifying divorce. I mean, I guess you put all the pieces together there and you have something exciting. Two beautiful, talented, famous people, and they're going at each other. They're basically going for the jugular, telling you all their inner secrets. And I don't know, I suppose that's interesting. It's like the royals. You know, do you care about the royals? I mean, other than the historic value of who the royal family is in England, do you care about what these people are doing? I mean, they're very privileged, very wealthy. They're not out in the street. They're not working on a farm. They're not feeding the animals. They're not digging holes. They're not electricians. They're not cops. These are just rich people that are born into this situation. And because of that, they're very well-heeled, I suppose. They're very well-heeled. They have something to say as though it's important. I guess there's a little altruism, I guess, that runs in that line. You know, when you see that's what their job is in life, is to be, I don't know, ambassadors to the world for Great Britain or whatever, for the United Kingdom. And they try and get involved in good causes. You know, Princess Diana, she was very, very involved in the landmine thing. And trying to do the right thing. So I guess I'm just trying to say celebrity is not that big a deal, is it really? Although when you ask kids today, you know, they used to want to be an astronaut or they'd want to be a doctor. Now what do you want to? I want to be a YouTube star. You know, I want to be a TikTok star. I want to have a million likes. And some of these people can make a lot of money. They sure can. You see, you know, you look on these TikToks and It's funny to watch how the algorithms work for these things, right? I went on there, my daughter, she's 20, 22 years old, and she's, you know, she's of that age that TikTok is really the thing. You know, they're all like these 30-second little videos, little video clips that people make. And at first, when it came out, it was really about young girls showing off their bodies, you know, and, oh, that's what TikTok is all about. You know, these girls get a million likes because they take their clothes off. Well, who knows that when you go on there, if you see a video, I'm doing a home improvement project right now. I'm doing a bathroom remodel, and I'm doing most of the work myself. I did all the demolition. I tore it all down, and I'm putting it all back. The only thing I'm doing, I'm having somebody help me with the tile because I want the tile to come out right. But I did the floor tile. But anyway, I saw this TikTok video of a guy doing sheetrocking, you know, doing spackling. And I watched it, and it was pretty good. The guy had some pretty good tips. Well, you start flipping through or rolling through, I guess what they're called, the reels. And, you know, and you see, okay, there's Mary Ellen, there's Tina, there's Gladys. And then, boop, there's somebody showing you, well, make sure when you use your drill gun that you angle it this way so you don't lose it in the screw. And then if you watch that, next thing you know, you're not getting Tina and Mary Ellen running around in bikinis anymore. Now you're seeing people who are fixing up their homes. You're seeing contractors. An electrician will pop up. Are you changing a wire? Let me show you a quick tip about changing a wire. And there's a ton of information out there. And when you see one of these videos, it'll tell you this has been viewed 1.9 million times. Well, if you get 1.9 million views in our modern world of media, of these videos and these kind of things, you can sell that time. That time has value. If you've got 1.9 million sets of eyeballs looking at what you're doing, they can sell ad time for that. So that's valuable. And that's this new world. That's why these kids are like, I want to be an influencer, a TikTok influencer. Because they will send you a check if you have enough people who watch what you do. So I found it interesting. That's where we go. You know, I have this radio program, and I want as many listeners, as many sets of ears as I can get to listen. So I try and make it interesting. I talk about what I hope is interesting topics and bring up points of view for people to think about. You know, we stray around here in Chasing Justice. We talk about justice as often as we possibly can. We talk about politics. We talk about human interest kind of things. You know, we have the guys in the neighborhood. They're a lot of fun. So I get it. You know, I'm part of that world trying to make something happen here, trying to be entertaining, I guess, so to speak. But other than somebody who would tune in here to Chasing Justice, would anybody else care about what Lieutenant Joe had to say? No, I don't know that they would. I guess I'm trying to be an influencer, and I'm working my way towards that. I did think about something I wanted to do, and I might have mentioned this before. You know, we all have opinions about our government, and we all have opinions about life and everything. And I said, what if I was to stop complaining about how the current president, President Biden, is running the country or running it into the ground, however you want to look at it. If I stopped complaining about that, and I said to myself, okay, what if you were the president? What if Lieutenant Joe was the president of the United States? What would you do? What would you say? How would you handle these situations? And I think if we start to look at it that way, instead of just armchair quarterbacking where we say, oh yeah, well, you should do this or you should that. You start to think through the difficulties of some of these decisions. Then you start to see that it's maybe it's not as easy as people think it is. But, you know, we can all say, this idiot should have done this. He should have done that. Why doesn't she say this? When you think about it, let's take 1 second and let's think about Ukraine and the war going on in Ukraine. Now, the big argument going back and forth is, do we just give them equipment, military equipment, so they can fight for themselves? Or do we eventually send American troops there to straighten this mess out? Right? Isn't that the big decision, really, that we're all trying to figure out? If we send American troops, that can open a whole can of worms. So Lieutenant Joe is now President Joe, and I have to make a decision. If I just send military hardware and it doesn't help the people of Ukraine and they are engulfed, swallowed up by the Russians. Well, maybe that's just one country. Maybe that is one horrific event in human history that we're all witnessing live every day. You know, now we're seeing mass graves with 9,000 people in them. This is a horrific thing that is going on. And the Russians are responsible for this. Now, I'm President Joe. I'm the United States of America now. I speak for the country. I'm in charge, right? What do I do? Do I stand back and just watch this and give it lip service? Because there's so many things I now have to worry about. See, when I'm just sitting home in my living room, I could say, we should just blow them up. Just drop a bomb on them Russians and stop them. But in reality, as the president now, I'm going to drop a bomb on somebody? And what ramifications does that have? Do the Russians then, in retaliation, launch a nuclear weapon at the United States? A tactical or a larger scale nuclear weapon in retaliation of me ordering that? Do they sink an American ship out at sea? Do they attack one of our allies? Do they give a weapon of mass destruction to Iran so Iran can attack Israel, one of our closest allies? See, all these things start to come into focus, and you start to say to yourself, gee, these decisions are not as easy as they may have seemed when you're just sitting in your armchair quarterback yelling out at people. Now, I don't think it helps that President Biden is addled a little bit by age, and he really is probably not thinking very clearly. He gives every indication that he's having a difficult time with his thinking, right? Because he's older. He's an older guy. I think my father-in-law, Ted's much older than him, and Ted is very, very clear. Ted can have a great conversation with you. He understands things, where Joe Biden seems, he's kind of lost at times. You know, shaking hands with nobody. I mean, that's just a symptom of old age and being addled. And that's just the natural occurrence of the human body. But if I'm President Joe and I'm sitting here and I see these people being slaughtered, my American heart tells me we stand up for the weak, right? Didn't we save Europe twice? Didn't we spend thousands and thousands of human lives of our young men and women, our treasure, our blood, to protect the world? Does there come a time that watching Putin and the Russians attack Ukraine, that as tragic and horrifying as it is to watch, it may just stop there? Now, this is where thinking comes in. If it just stopped there, what is the lens through which you would make these decisions? And I posit this: the lens through which you make these decisions is not just common sense. The lens you make through these decisions through is strength or weakness. Because how you make a decision based on strength or weakness will very often determine how the other side responds to you. Right? All right, so let's clarify that a little. Right now we're seeing the slaughter of innocent people at a train station, in a maternity ward, standing in the street, getting attacked, thousands of people buried in mass graves. Execute the prisoners of war. Now, that's a rumor coming out that somebody intercepted a Russian radio transmission, military radio transmission, where they said, execute the prisoners. And that would be where some of these 9,000 people come from. And there's multiple apparent mass graves all over Ukraine based on the Russians attacking and killing civilians and military people. If I have to make this decision, and I make it from strength, and I say the moral thing to do is to step in and help, like it's always been. You know, Europe always seems to need our help. It always seems to need America's blood and treasure and strength to protect itself from its own activities. Because right now, if you look at that situation, if Europe had been strong, they would have stepped in and said or done something to stop Putin as he was building up these troops on the border. But of course, all of this leads to responses, right? So doing nothing Sitting back and doing nothing has led to a response. Putin crossed the border. Putin attacked. Putin killed randomly. He's wiping out an entire people. He's committing genocide because a decision was made to not do anything, to simply watch. And now everyone, well, not everyone, most of the United States is scrambling to give the Ukrainians weapons so they can fight back for themselves, even at this point when the battle appears to be almost lost. Even though the Russians are not winning significant battles, they're not sweeping across the country like everyone assumed they would do, they are still winning in the long run here. Even though the Ukrainian people are fighting back valiantly, the decision was made from weakness that, gee, if we do anything, if we step up, then he's going to get us. Well, it's probably a good lesson to look at history. How many times a strong man has stepped forward and was not rebuked or was not pushed back early on, it emboldens them and it makes them go forward. But that doesn't mean there isn't consequences. If Poland and Germany and all of these countries had gotten together and massed their troops on the border of Ukraine or even entered Ukraine and said, we're here to support them, we would have had the loss of life of German soldiers and French soldiers and whatever countries sent military personnel into Ukraine would have suffered losses. And then we have potentially a bigger war. Now, geographically, other than the fact that Putin has nuclear weapons, and you'd have to figure that is a death knell. If he fires a nuclear weapon, it's not going to be a strategic move where, okay, he lights off one nuclear weapon and it hits Paris because the French sent their military to Ukraine to help protect those people. And he lights up Paris. Well, there's going to be retaliation for that. He's going to get wiped out. I mean, Russia's going to get wiped, and then we're all going to get wiped out. Because, you know, one group starts launching nuclear weapons and everyone starts launching them, and then the submarines start launching, and it is the basic nightmare scenario that we all have tried to prevent in this nuclear age. But the reality is, if you make the decision from weakness, we see the tragedy unfolding in Ukraine. We see slaughter of innocent people. And this is where, you know, morality comes into play. We have to say, how much innocent life do we let a dictator, a demon like Putin, how much do we let him do before we have to step in anyway? See, and I think that's the part of the equation that hasn't been thought through. Are we going to eventually have to do something anyway? Right? Now, I don't know. Maybe he will be satisfied with just wiping out the Ukrainian people and taking over that land. And that would be where it would end. So then the decision to do nothing, the weak decision of to do nothing, would have limited consequences because he would take in Ukraine, he would have wiped out the people, committed genocide. We all would feel horrible that we witnessed this and did nothing, but then it would be over. And then he would just conduct his business as everything goes on. But taking a position from strength could have led to more attacks, right? He could retaliate, he could do other things. But if he doesn't stop, if he doesn't stop at the Ukraine border, what if he decides to go somewhere else next? What if he decides there's another part of the former Soviet Union that he wants back and he starts to attack that area? Do we do nothing again? See, because leap forward 5 years or 10 years, he's now reamassed most of the Soviet Union and he is now an aggressor. Doesn't that lead us to, at some point, going to have to be challenged by that aggressor? Isn't that how it normally works? That aggressor will decide, you know what, I think Poland should be back with me. And I'm going to take Poland now. Do we stand by when he attacks Poland? What is NATO actually going to do? Is NATO actually going to do anything? Or is it basically, at the end of World War II, it was a great idea, it was a powerful idea, and we just came out of bloodshed for how many years, and we were willing to be strong, But over the course of time, that kind of backs up. And now, you know, are the French and the British and the Americans, are really going to go fight over there? Again, are we really going to, are we going to amass people and go? I don't know. I don't know that the world is in a state where it can fight back from something like this. And this is all very illuminating. You know, one of the things that we're seeing in our modern age here is that all the things that we took for granted that are rules, the rules of life, rules of engagement with each other, rules of law, all these things that we thought were so bedrock, in the last 5 or 10 years, haven't we seen all of them be taken apart? That their old rules really don't hold any weight anymore. That here in America, the rule of law. Does the rule of law really hold any weight anymore? Wasn't it something that we all had this contract with each other, that we agreed to live in a stable society and follow the laws and abide by the laws? And we all understood that if you broke the laws, you would suffer penalty. But in our modern world, is that real anymore? Don't we see rioters looting and destroying entire cities? They get arrested and then all the charges are dropped. Does that make rioters in the future stronger or weaker? Now, it might have been a decision that the leadership of these cities here in America that decided to drop the charges on the looters and the rioters from the 2020 riots, maybe they made that decision, what they thought was from weakness, because, you know, it's better that we back off and not inflame things, because it's over now. And, you know, if we put people in jail, then it could start up again. See, that's from weakness. A decision from strength would have been, no, we cannot tolerate that kind of behavior from anybody in our society. You can't loot and burn and destroy and steal just because you're angry about something. So therefore, we shut it down. We found those who were responsible. We arrest them, and they are punished by prison time or whatever the punishment may be. That is a decision from strength. Could that lead to more people being more angry? Yes. But it could also lead to people realizing, uh-oh, this is serious. We better not loot and riot and burn anymore. Maybe we better use our voices to protest instead of going out and stealing and destroying entire areas, right? So that's really, I guess, my back and forth here, comparing the United States situation to the world situation of making decisions based on strength or weakness. Now, admittedly, it took me a while to get to this point of view here in this on this episode here, but that's really what I'm talking about. I started out talking about, do we care about celebrities and what they mean? And while it's not directly connected, it is somewhat connected if you think about it some more. And that's what I like to do here, is to think about things and how they connect. So we're worried about celebrity instead of worrying about real things. Well, in our justice system today, aren't we worried about all kinds of things that have nothing to do with justice, right? So there's a connection there. When we're looking at Ukraine, we're kind of watching it from afar. We're horrified by what's happening because it's disgusting and horrible. But we're not doing anything about it because it might get worse. Well, it might get worse anyway, right? That might be where we're at, and we're failing to recognize this. So that's kind of my point. Making decisions from strength or from weakness, it's something we need to consider as a people. But here's the question that comes to mind. Just like I said, I don't know if we could mobilize the way we did in World War II. Now, physically, we could. We could put together the ships and the army and the people, and we could do something. But you know what it all comes down to? The leadership. How many times have you heard this? And I've heard this a lot, raising young people. Under this president, if we went to war, I wouldn't let my kid go under this president. My kid ain't dying because of this president, right? But under a different president, you'd be okay to let them go. Isn't that something that's real? Is that from a position of strength, or is that from a position of weakness? Well, I have to tell you, if you get one of these crazy left-wing socialist politicians in charge of this country, and they want to do something that is against my principles, against my beliefs, against what I think is the right thing in the world, and they want to recruit my 18-year-old son to go and die, I don't know that I want him to go. Right? Now, is that... What exactly is that? I say that to myself. But if there was a different president and we were fighting for the values and things that I believe in that were classical, I'm connecting the point again. You know, what we all thought was the right way, what we all believe, the contract we made with each other about a civilized society no longer exists. Well, no longer does it exist in the world. Who do we stand up for? Well, we're all going to step away until we have to do something. But sometimes if you wait that long, it is much, much, much more difficult to then step into the breach to have to do what we have to do. And I think, unfortunately, whether we could do this or not, again, I don't know. Do we have the young people today that if a war broke out, would go running to the recruit station at 17 years old, lying and saying they were 18 so they could fight for their country? Do we have those young people? Or are they all TikTok influencers and they all want to be their own thing and they all have been influenced by other generations that they believe America is not worth fighting for, that America is not a good place, that it should be changed, right? All of these considerations, if I was President Joe, I'd have to take into account. I would have to consider them. So my point there being, if you're an armchair quarterback and you just sit back and yell and scream at the news and why don't they do this and why don't they do that? If I was the president, I would do it. You have to really think through these things because every action you take, every decision you make is going to have some kind of ramification, good or bad. And that good can be good in the short term or it can be bad in the short term. It can be good in the long term or bad in the long term. The key is to figure it out. And this is where I would say, if it was up to me, President Joe, I would make decisions from positions of strength. I would make positions of strength be my balance. What is morally correct? What is traditionally right? That's how I would make decisions. And there's no way around it. If you're the commander in chief, one of your jobs is to command the military, and we may lose people if we have to use military strength. I'm not opposed to using the military if it's needed. At the same time, I don't want to use it just because it's available. That is not always the answer. But a position of strength or a position of weakness, making decisions, I seem to think that anyone who makes decisions from positions of weakness, it's always going to end up worse than if you make decisions based on strength. If you make decisions based on weakness, there's a flaw in there. There's a flaw because you're stepping back, you're giving up, you're looking away, you're overlooking things that can hurt you. If you make it from strength, yeah, you might still have a problem, you might still have a difficulty, but at the same time, you're pushing forward. You're pushing forward for what you believe is right, what you believe is correct, what you stand for. The problem that I think we have is that we all don't stand for the same thing anymore. There was a time we all stood for the same thing, even if we had different beliefs on how we would get to those things. We believed the same things. I don't know that we do in modern America today. So that's the question I'm asking you. How do you make decisions, from strength or weakness? We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice, and we'll talk about some other topics that are important.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
All right, everybody, come on back in. Come on back in, everybody. Come on in, sit back down, get a glass of iced tea. It might be early for some people, but you might pick up an adult beverage and then get close, and let's see where we are here. So in our first segment there, I appreciate you letting me think this through a little bit, you know, try and think this through. I come up with my topic based on what I see going on in the world, and I try and connect the dots. Is there any connection is one of the questions that I ask myself. Is there any connection to this? And when I came up with the concept of making decisions from strength or from weakness, I think that came out of looking at so many of the things that we're deciding on now. So, while I don't want to belabor the point much more, I want to give some other examples. And you, I'm sure, can come up with examples of your own. If you have an American border, now, for a country to be a sovereign nation, it has to have a defined and secured border, because the people of the country have to decide who comes in. That's a common sense point of view. That is a security-based point of view. You know, who's going to come in? Why do they want to come in? What are they going to do when they get here? Are the people coming in, are they going to add to a society, or are they going to take away from the society? Are they going to be a positive, or are they going to be a negative? Are they going to be a drain on society? Now, in our modern world, even the idea of this conversation is skewed. Oh, what makes people a negative? Because you don't like them, Lieutenant Joe, right? They want to immediately call names. I don't care who wants to come to the country. You know, we are a nation of immigrants, but we're also a nation of laws, right? So shouldn't we be? So if we make this decision to open our border from a position of strength, we would go back to President Joe and he would say, listen, immigrants over the years have brought tremendous value to the United States. All the different peoples that have come here brought their talents, their skills, their cultures, and they came here and made America a better place. And I believe that will continue into the future, because I think that's one of the hallmarks of what America does when it functions traditionally. So from a position of strength, I would say we have to have a secure border. We cannot allow people to just come pouring into the United States because we don't know who they are. We don't know what they want to do here. We don't know whether they're going to be a positive or a negative. So therefore, we have to secure that border. And how would you do it? Well, sure, we can use drone technology. We can use cameras. We can use this and that. That's all well and good. But it doesn't work 100%. Matter of fact, it doesn't even work 50%. People that want to come across the border illegally, and as we've said here many times, as I personally have said many times, I believe that the overwhelming majority of the people who want to come to our country want to come here because they want a better life for themselves and their family. I absolutely believe that. There's no doubt about it. And that's the overwhelming majority. I don't blame them. If I lived in a place that was filled with poverty and crime and negativity and close by, right next door, was a place that wasn't that, I would want to take my family there. I would want to follow the rules, but you know what? If I saw that the rules weren't important, that I could just walk over there and they gave me all kinds of stuff, I would be foolish not to go. So therefore, the only thing that would stop me from just taking the easy way and not following the rules would be to say, there's a consequence for me doing that. If I go over that border, they're going to take me into custody and they're going to return me to my home. I'm not going to get to stay. I'm not going to get an Obama phone. I'm not going to get money. I'm not going to get a free airplane ride to anywhere I want in the country. I'm not going to be given money. I'm not going to be sustained in any way. They're going to send me back. So therefore, I'm going to get online and I'm going to do it legally. I'm going to follow the process, right? So a lot of people, oh, Lieutenant Joe, it's easy for you to say, for the process. Well, what about the people? It's not good where they live. Well, I understand that. Aren't there neighborhoods in America that aren't good where people live? Right? Of course there are. Places that are not good to live. Because they're crime-ridden, they're poverty-ridden, the housing is not nice, the schools aren't good. But in our country, as citizens, we can move from one place to another. Other people in other countries cannot just walk in our back door because it's open. We have to secure it. And what's the best way to secure it? You put up a fence so that people can't just walk in. You funnel people to the legal system to do it right. Right? As much as people hated Donald Trump when he said, they're going to put up a wall, but there's going to be great big doors in it. That is not hatred. That is common sense if you're going to secure your border. But at the same time, you know you want legal immigration. You want people to come here to add to the value of the country. Right? So you put doors in it, and the doors are represented by the process. And then it is okay for us to have standards of what we want from people who want to come here. Right? It is okay to say, okay, we're going to take X amount of people who are leaving a war-torn region where they could die. And they have no skills, they have no education. We'll take X amount of those people. And the rest of the world should take some of those people. Right? It's good to be charitable. But we can't take everyone's uneducated people. We can't take everyone's poverty-ridden people. We don't have it here in America. There's not enough in America. We can only pay so much taxes. We can only work so hard. We can only split the pie so many ways. And people want to call that, oh, that's hatred. You have hatred. Not hatred. It's from a position of strength that we have to, you take care of your own family first, right? God, family, country, right? God, family, country. Right? So we take care of ourselves and our families, and we take care of our country, then we take care of those outside of our country who need assistance. We can't take them all. It's unfortunate, we just can't take them all. So we have to have rules and laws, and we have to have a way to control who comes here. It wasn't not too long ago in the news where they said Homeland Security has identified at least 23 people on the terrorist watch list who came across the southern border. Everybody said, oh, 23 people. That's nothing. 2 million people came. So you're talking about 23? How many people took down the planes on 9/11? Right? I think there was 19 hijackers. So 23 known terrorist watch list people made it across the border. Do you know 800,000 people came across the border that we didn't catch? They call them getaways. Those are people that got away from being identified. So out of them 800,000, how many more potential terrorist watch list people you think got across? 5? 7? 10? Does it matter? What can one person do who really wants to do something horrible to our country? And we know people do. Terrorism is real. It's been quiet for a while because we hit it pretty hard. But it's going to make a comeback. It's going to make a comeback. It's inevitable. It's part of human existence. So the border has to be secure. How many of you have lost somebody to a drug overdose? You know, fentanyl, heroin. Hundreds of thousands of American young people have overdosed and died for a couple of reasons. First of all, we're trying to make decisions about whether drugs are good or drugs are not good and this and that. And, you know, drugs are bad, right? Are you free to take them? If you can find them, sure, you take your drugs, take your heroin. What is the purpose of taking heroin? What good, and I'm not being a prude here. You know, some people like to get high because they like the physical experience of being high. Why do we have cocktails? Right? Because they just taste so good, or because we like the feeling of a little bit of a buzz when you have a couple of cocktails. Have a couple of beers with your friends watching sports or whatever. Have a couple glasses of wine with your loved one, right? It enhances the experience. I get it. But heroin? I mean, that becomes an addiction that destroys people's lives. How much heroin and fentanyl is coming across that open border? how many innocent young people that get caught up in the drug use are going to die? Well, there was over 100,000 people last year who died from drug overdose deaths. So the open border is not only allowing millions of people to come here that can't really help us, but it's also allowing these drugs to come pouring over this border that have killed 100,000 Americans. These are people's children, daughters, wives, fathers who are dead today because those drugs got over the border. So we can argue about, you know, a family that wants to come to America for a better life and whether or not we should open our doors and just let them in and find a way to take care of them. What about those Americans that are already here that are dying because their drugs are coming in? Why won't we even talk about that? Because it messes up a plan. Now, you know I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but what is the purpose of letting all these people come flying across the border? You know, if you listen to President Biden's spokespeople, Jen Psaki, when they're asked, isn't the border wide open? No, the border's not wide open. Border's not wide open at all. People come in, we contact them, we know who they are. We release them into the country because they have a right to have a hearing. And when they come back, we'll send people back who don't belong to be here. Does anybody think that that's what's really happening? How many people do you think have been sent back from the last, 2 months when they've had a million people cross the border? How many of those million people are going to go back? Probably none. They're processed. How are they processed? They're given a sheet of paper and said, where would you like to go in the country? And they're flown or driven there, dropped off and said, now listen, you go self-report to the local board so people know where you are. Who believes that that's really happening? Of course it's not happening. If I brought my family here for a better life and they let me go in this country and I went and I did all the proper thing, they might send me back. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go find a job, find a life and blend in. Right? Nobody's going to come back for these hearings. And it's proven that they don't come back for these hearings. But why don't we talk about that? Why isn't something we all know? No, because you're a hater. You're a hater if you don't want people coming in here. See, and that's a powerful thing to throw at somebody. To say that they're a hater. That the reason they don't want people here is because they hate them. Because that discredits anything you have to say. But what I'm trying to say is if we just look at that open border and millions of people who are coming across here, are we making those decisions from strength or weakness? Well, I think I have to ask myself, if I was in charge, and I made a note here. It's in my note says, none of this is by accident. So I know Ted's out there. Ted, how are you? Thank you for listening all the time. My father-in-law, Ted, very good man. And we have these conversations. We're trying to figure out the world, Ted and I. And Ted gets very frustrated about why doesn't somebody do something about this, right? That's always the conversation that it comes down to. When we look at what happened, what went on with the government, when we see that the Russian hoax things was an absolute complete hoax, why doesn't somebody do something about it? Well, who's going to do something about it? The people in charge who created the hoax? No, none of that is by accident. The border is wide open and 100,000 people are dying from all the drugs coming in. Why don't we close the border to keep them drugs out? Right? We got people coming in on the terrorist watch list. Why don't we close the border and keep those people out so they don't hurt us? Well, the reason that we don't close the border and we let the drugs in and we let the terrorists in and we let all in the people that maybe we can't have here, we just don't have enough resources for, the reason we do that is not on accident. It's not because the Biden administration is stupid or they don't understand what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. And that's what makes it frustrating, I think, for people and for people like Ted who see the world and saw the world in a different way in the past and see it now and go, this is wrong. Why are we doing this? Does somebody tell them? They know. They know full well what they're doing. It's not by accident. They're doing this on purpose for a reason. The problem I think many people have is that they can't believe the reason. Nobody would do this for a reason. They have to be, it has to be some other motive It has to be accidental. Maybe they really don't know that these people are coming in, and then the heroin's coming in and the fentanyl's coming. Maybe they really don't know. But that's not true. The reality is, none of this is by accident. This is all being done on purpose. This is a point of view, a political point of view that the party in power has a right to. They won the election. They get to do their thing, what they think is right. And if you don't agree, you have another election, you vote for somebody different. But right now, the Biden administration is allowing all these people in, allowing these drugs in, because the bigger purpose here is exactly what they've stated. They want to change the makeup of America to make it, more fair in their eyes, to take away the old power structure that used to be here. And they want the votes. If they let in 12 million people, and you say out of those 12 million people, 10 million of them are going to vote for them, for thanking them. Well, look at our presidential elections. The difference is usually between 5 and 6, sometimes 7 million votes that change the entire outcome of the election. You add 10 million people that are going to vote one way or another, and that election is now locked up. And the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So you have to say to yourself, is all of this by accident? Are they incompetent? Are they so stupid not to see the danger of just allowing millions of people to come into the country, not knowing who anybody is, not keeping track of anybody, draining resources that we don't have, and bringing in all this kind of drugs and potential terrorists? Why would somebody do that? Why would that be your plan? Well, because you have to have a plan that they're not talking about, and that plan is, and I honestly believe, that it's probably a lot about the votes. They figure a lot of people that they're going to let in are going to vote for them, for one party over the other, and that will keep them in power. And if your kid ends up on fentanyl or heroin and dies, well, that's just the price you have to pay so that they can stay in charge. And I don't want to be cynical about it, but I have to look at it honestly. We can't look at things honestly anymore. Because one side determines what is legitimate to think, right? Don't we have thought police now? We do. We have thought police in America. Do you ever think you'd see that? And that group decides what is proper thought. And anything that's not proper thought has to be silenced, shut down, and destroyed. Is that the America you thought you'd end up in? Is that the America you want for your children? Well, whether we want it or not, that's where we are now. Because of the way, and how come that is? Let's go back to segment one. See, I am looping this all together. I am looping it all together here. Why is all this happening? Making decisions out of strength or weakness? It all has a purpose. It all has a purpose to change the way things are for something that people think is going to be better. And traditional things are not considered good anymore. They're considered bad. They're even considered evil. You know, think about it. Traditional America is considered evil. And if you don't control the media, if you don't control the government, if you don't control the levers of power, and you are the ones considered evil, then you're going to suffer. And we are all suffering because, just like I'm telling you, none of this is by accident. Right? None of this is by accident. Every single thing we're seeing, the oil prices and gasoline prices going through the roof, that's for a purpose. Didn't Joe Biden tell us he guarantees he will get rid of fossil fuels? And he's doing it. And well, unfortunately, you know, there is no alternate power source other than fossil fuels to power our economy and our lives. But if their belief is they got to get rid of it, well, then you have to pay the price. You could pay $5 a gallon, right? Just like your child can die on heroin because they need the votes. So therefore, it's the way it is. So all of these things, when you look at them, you have to say to yourself, what is the simplest answer? Start with that. The simplest answer is usually the truth, right? So I don't think anything that's going on today is by accident. It's all on purpose. The real differentiator is that they can't always tell us what their purpose is because most of us wouldn't go along with it. right? People would say, whoa, 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 that's just a little too far. Isn't that what's going on in our schools right now? Right? Nobody is opposed to people being recognized and to make sure people are all treated nicely and fairly and decently. No one should be picked on or attacked because of who they love or how they see themselves. Nobody should be, right? There should be a tolerance for that. Everybody should be who they are. But we're seeing that it's not going fast enough. So we're seeing the parental rights attack. Attack on parental rights because you parents aren't getting it. And we got to move it faster. Is that correct? I don't know, but that's a battle all across the country. That's a battle that's going on all across the country. I want to change gears here for the last couple of minutes. I guess I'm changing gears, but is it really different? I guess that's the question. We're seeing that maybe there might be a deal in the works with Elon Musk and Twitter, that he might actually find a way to purchase Twitter and take it over. And if he does, what will that mean? Well, the fact that we're seeing people losing their minds over this guy going to be free speech. Think about that. People are upset that there'll be free speech on Twitter, that it won't be controlled if Elon Musk takes it over. And maybe it will. Maybe he's just as bad as the rest of them. He doesn't sound like he is, but maybe he will be. Free speech is the cornerpin, the linchpin of our freedoms. And it looks like they've worked out it. They tried to do the poison pill deal so that he couldn't buy his way in. But it looks like maybe they worked something out and he may end up taking it over. Will that change Twitter? Will that change the way people get to speak? Will Trump be allowed to go back on there and speak? And guess what? If you don't like him, you don't like his tweets, don't listen to them. Right? That's the answer. Not banning people. Right? So that's interesting to see where that's going, because that's heating up and it's coming to a head, I would think, sooner rather than later. I think it's a good thing if he buys it and he does the right thing and he opens the platform back up, because I'm very discerning. If I see a tweet that somebody tweets out that I don't like, that I just think is rotten, you know what I do? I ignore it or I delete it. I don't lose my mind over it. I don't. Everyone has all kinds of opinions. Good and bad. I ignore the bad ones, and I'm glad, happy to about the good ones. So that's how I handle it. We're seeing concerns in Florida. I want to touch base on this real quick. We know there's a huge thing about parental rights down there. And what is a parental right? What rights do parents actually have? And what does the government, rights does the government have over your child and what your child is taught? That's a pretty big topic. That's pretty important. I think parents have the rights to decide that. But that's just me. But there's talk of getting Disneyland to leave Florida. I saw this the other day. Raise the park. Raise it and get out of there and go somewhere else. That's a multi-billion dollar effort that they would have to go through to pull up stakes and leave Florida. Now, Governor DeSantis making a decision to strip Disneyland of its special rules to make its own rules and to govern itself and this and the other thing is going to be costly to some of the counties where Disneyland is located. That could potentially be a bad thing for DeSantis politically if it costs people money. Well, you know, hey, Disney was paying all this money. Now we have to pay this money because of what you did. Is that a decision he's making based on strength or weakness? It's a decision he's making on strength, because if he did it from weakness, he would just avoid the topic. And there are people who are very concerned about the topic. It's very important on both sides of the issue, right? It is very important to both sides. But if he did nothing about it and left it alone, wouldn't that be a decision that would favor one side over the other? So a weak decision may keep one side quiet because they're happy and they have more influence or more ability to influence things, but the other side would be very unhappy. But if you come at it from a position of strength, where he has a belief that he thinks is right, and he is exerting that belief and he's standing by it, even if it's going to be politically difficult for him, because taxes are going to go up in the counties where Disney's located, and now they have to pay a lot of the stuff that Disney used to kick in for. That is a position of strength he's taking, because he's taking a chance. He's sticking to principle of what he thinks is right for the parents of the state of Florida, for them to make decisions about their kids, what the kids are told and what they're not told. And we're not talking about high school kids here. We're talking about little kids. These are real little kids that don't know nothing from nothing. We're going to start talking about things that we shouldn't be talking to them about. When they get into the older grades, sure, have that conversation, because that's when kids can understand things. They have their own thoughts and feelings, and everyone, we should hear everybody's thoughts and feelings and do what we can to help everybody. But little kids, no. Little kids, mom and dad are the ones who should be making decisions about what little kids are told and believe, based on your family's belief, your family's decisions. That's how that works. You know, those children belong to their families, and they should make those kind of decisions. When the kids get older, you can offer all kinds of other opinions at age-appropriate levels, right? At age-appropriate levels. Everything is age-appropriate. But Disney's thinking about leaving over this. Are they actually going to leave? Will this decision backfire on Governor DeSantis, that he took a stand on what he believes to be correct, and some people in Florida are going to be hurt by it? Are they going to throw him out? Well, that's a absolute potential of taking a stand, isn't it? When we take a stand and we make a decision from strength, just like deciding what to do about Russia, if you take a weak decision, things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. If you take a strong decision, bad things are going to happen, maybe. But what in the end is going to be better? Making a decision from strength or making a decision from weakness? Even though you might have bad results from both, in the long term, what is the difference that you're going to have there by making a stand? I think by making a stand, you make a choice. And right, wrong, or indifferent, if you believe it and you can articulate it and you make your stand, that's probably the better way to go. So all in all, Lieutenant Joe here, I'm in favor of making decisions from a point of strength as opposed from a position of weakness. And I think it's something each one of us have to think about as we go forward. So we covered a lot today. I mean, I wanted to get into a couple other things, but I think we covered it all. Nothing is happening by accident. Everything's happening on purpose. And elections have consequences. You got to decide, where do you want your country to go? And the next time you get a chance to get in a voting booth, make that decision. That's the power we all have as Americans. So until next time, my friends, remember, be part of that solution, not part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe signing off. Until